103.2 Dublin City FM. This is Mental Wealth with Brian Green. If you want to get in touch with the programme, the email address is mentalwealth@dublincityfm.ie. If you've got any ideas for future programmes, that's the email address to use. On today's programme, I'm talking to somebody I spoke to on the programme here last September at a conference. You'll remember that I spoke with Declan Lynch, the journalist and author who's on the line now. Declan.
Hi, Brian.
How you doing? You were telling me a year ago that you had a book coming out in March. That would have been March 2018. The book is out, and I didn't get a chance to talk to you when it came out, so I've got a chance to talk to you now. The book is called Tony 10. Tell us what it's about.
Well, Brian, it's about a man called Tony O'Reilly, who was the manager of a post office in Gorey, County Wexford, and who became quite well known maybe 6 or 7 years ago when it was discovered that he had been stealing essentially about 1.75 million from his employer in order to fund his online betting account with Paddy Power. It became particularly well known because on the day he was discovered as such, he fled. He went on the run up north. And, of course, it was a great dramatic story. He was up there for a few days. Eventually, he was found. He came back. He went to jail. He got a sentence of 4 years with 1 year suspended. And in the course of all this, I was writing a lot about online gambling. I was writing about this back 10 years ago or more, you know. There was a book I wrote called Free Money, which was a kind of a warning, if you like, or just a book saying, look, there's a pretty major thing going on here with online gambling, and it was about the nature of gambling in general. And then I saw Tony's story, and it was just such a perfect illustration of how an individual can get swept away by this addiction, you know. And it was an Irish story. It had so much drama in it, so much kind of tragedy, and yet, of course, he came out of it in the end. He's still out there, and he's now a counsellor. That he survives it at all is amazing.
You're a journalist, and you have a nose for a story, so obviously the country can see this on the front pages, and they can see it as it's happening, the on-the-run part of the story.
Yeah.
But there's layers and layers and layers of the story, I can imagine, that are deeper than what we saw in the press.
Oh, completely. And you see, one of the issues Tony had was that he hated most of the things that were written about him because they were so sensationalised. Half of them were wrong, you know, just factually wrong. The tone of it was very accusatory, particularly the tabloid stuff. And what happened was, because I was writing about his story in a particular way and kind of, I suppose, drawing attention to the addiction that a lot of people suffer from, he made contact with me. He had gone to jail. He just happened to see the Sunday Independent in jail. And he contacted his father to say, could he give me a ring to say that he'd kind of liked the article I wrote about it, right? And so we made contact in that way. I got to know his father first, who's also called Tony O'Reilly. And from then I wrote to Tony. We wrote to each other. We kind of set up a kind of contact in that way. And just when he got out of jail, then we got to know each other. We, kept talking about maybe doing something about the story. I kept writing about it in the paper. And ultimately, we decided on the book being the best thing. It was very difficult for him because, he was out of jail now. He was trying to get his life together. And he had this kind of natural reluctance to go back and start,
digging up the past, yeah.
This terrible stuff, you know. But we did it, and he was really, really good about it and had great recollection of things and a really strong handle on everything. And we got it done. In the meantime, I would be writing in the paper about it. I would be sending questions to Paddy Power, simple things like, have you any intention of giving back the 1.75 million? There's literally a different law for bookmakers than there is for the rest of us. But the thing about the Tony story as well is that it touched every single aspect of this problem, if you like, And, it is a major problem, and a hidden one largely, but people who have read the book, Tony Ten, or Tony Ten, incidentally, I should explain, was his username on Paddy Power. So that's where the title comes from. And in a way, it was like an alter ego, you know? I mean, in one life, he was doing really well. He was one of the youngest post office managers in the country. You know, his life ordinarily was excellent. But there was this other side, this Tony Ten, who was on a daily basis betting thousands, sometimes like 30,000, 40,000 on crazy bets. Once he got addicted, it just was, he was constantly trying to get back to where he started, trying to, once he started taking money, he was constantly trying to get money back just to return it and all, get back to zero, you know. So it touches every aspect of it.
When does it start to go wrong? The ads on the telly say when the enjoyment stops, but obviously it's not possible to stop if you're addicted at that point.
And you see, online gambling in particular is so addictive in itself that you could almost describe it as a new addiction. Do you know what I mean? It's like it has so many extra elements than just what you might call old-fashioned gambling that you nearly have to look at it in a completely new way. You know, the technology itself is set up to be addictive. Right, these are really, really clever people. It's the internet itself, as we know, is addictive. Sport, which a lot of people bet on, has its own kind of addictive element. A lot of it is on television. So it's this whole confluence of addictions. And if you're any way vulnerable to it, you've almost no chance of escaping it. And Tony, as it happened, Tony hadn't had a bet until he was 24. You know, he was quite a stranger to betting. But it was once he got an online, someone gave him a present of a €50 voucher for Paddy Power, an online betting voucher. And once he got onto that, he just took to it. He just obviously had this vulnerability to it, and it took over his life. But, like, Tony isn't the only person here. It is so addictive, it's so troubling that this is out there, and we're hearing these stories all the time now. We're seeing people, you know, being able to bet huge amounts of money because they might be working in a place where they have access to money, like in a bank or whatever. It's quite easy to, you know, bet on credit. You don't sort of need to have cash in your hand like you used to in the old days. You don't even need to leave the house, you know. You don't need to get out of bed to be losing hundreds of thousands.
It could be 2 a.m. in the morning and it could be Chinese basketball.
Yeah, this is the thing. With Tony, you see, he started out and he was, I suppose, what you might call a pretty sensible punter. He was quite a good punter. Do you know what I mean? He knew sport. He was really good on football. He played football himself and was very into sport, you know. So he wasn't just some ignorant person. I mean, he really knew his stuff. And, you know, he did actually make a little bit of money originally, or at least his first bet won. That always happens. That's a recurring theme with people who get addicted to gambling, that they have a great win at the start. And it gives them such a huge buzz, and they are constantly trying to recapture that. But Tony, for quite a while, would have been betting fairly sensibly. Do you know what I mean? He was, you know, he was betting on things he knew about. He was betting on sort of things that had some chance of winning, kind of. Do you know what I mean? Or like he was not conservative, but he wasn't mad.
But he wasn't betting for fun then. He was trying to kind of beat the system.
At a certain level, yes, he was. He felt he was good at it. And you could say that he was. Like, this is one of the really alarming things about Tony, that if anyone ever would have had a chance of, if you like, taking on the bookies, you might imagine it would be Tony, because he had a real feel for it. I mean, he was able to kind of price up things very well. You know, he was able to judge if the odds were in his favour or not. You know, he was a smart guy. And for a while, the best he ever was, he was about 10 or 11 grand up. And he was thinking, I'll get out of this now, right? I'll be able to pay off all my debts, maybe go on a holiday. And he decided to do that. And then the Galway races was on. And he said, look, he got caught up in it. In a day or two, all that money's gone. And it's a kind of a traumatic thing. And then he's chasing that money. And once he starts chasing his losses, once he starts borrowing more and more money and, you know, losing that and then trying to get it back. At that point, the addiction really kicks in because he's just then betting on anything. Do you know what I mean? He's a real victim to that fact that the online gambling websites have something on all the time. Mad stuff, right? And you have always have something to bet on. And if you're desperate and if you're addicted, you will bet on those things. All your kind of sense, wit or reason has gone at this stage. And so Tony, who had been kind of fairly kind of astute, you know, who used to plan things, who would be having, say, you know, bets on the World Cup, you know, worked out in advance, was eventually just throwing large amounts of money on accumulators, on stuff, tennis matches with players he'd never even heard of, just because they were on at that time and because he had become just transfixed by the thing and by the terrible need to get money back somehow. And this endless spiral goes on, goes downwards and downwards. And there are many people like him, I believe, out there.
Tell me about the bookies. They have, when your chips are down, when your luck is down and you haven't got much money in your account, they give you incentives and they give you free bets and things. How does it work?
Oh, well, I mean, we're very well aware of that now from this the amount of advertising out there. They're constantly inveigling you in, you know. Their great goal is always just get people signed up, right? Because once you're on those things, you immediately realise that they are so addictive, right? And I guess it's just an old story that it's something that's very enjoyable and also very dangerous. And usually with things like that, we legislate for them or we make them difficult or we make them kind of unpleasant in some way. But that simply hasn't happened. So we're living in this world now with this tsunami of advertising and promotion on a scale that I don't think most people can even comprehend. We saw recently Michael D. Higgins, the president, talking about this, that he was trying to put it out there that sports betting shouldn't be advertised, right? Or at least it shouldn't be advertised in the way that it is, because sport is now inextricable from betting, all sport, right? It used to be the case that horse racing and betting were completely intertwined, but other sports not so much. Now every sporting event that goes on nearly has some tie-in with betting. And we are just inundated with this stuff. So, again, if you're a young guy and you've gotten particularly, they all have phones, it's all really accessible, it seems just like an easy way to make money, I guess, you know, in a difficult world. So you'll get onto one of these sites, they have free bets, and they're usually structured in such a way that you will have to have 3 or 4 bets before you can get anything back, right? So at that stage, you will already have had the experience. You know what I mean? You will have won something, maybe, and you'll have the buzz of that. You'll kind of just get familiar with the whole thing. And it's just so clever. They have you then, and you're off, you know?
I imagine that the government are taxing these betting companies heavily, are they?
Not at all, I think, would be more close to the...
they don't pay tax.
The truth. Well, they pay certain taxes, I guess, you know, but you know, in a quite a corporate sense, right? But in terms of betting tax itself, doesn't exist now, right? It's truly extraordinary. When I was a kid, betting tax was 20%. If you had a bet of £1 in a betting office, you had to have £1.20. Now, if you have a bet of €10, it's 10 euro. It's truly extraordinary. I mean, you know that, like, everything we do in this world is taxed, right? There is nothing you can do in Ireland that doesn't have, apart from betting. Like, it's an amazing thing. They must be lobbying at an extraordinary level. I think as well, politicians, most of them don't get it. It's a sign of how brilliantly the bookies have worked their magic. You know what I mean? They have invested massively in normalising betting, in making it seem like a bit of a laugh, a harmless bit of entertainment, almost family entertainment, right? They have really succeeded in that, right? And to the extent that most people, I think, still have a very, very kind of lighthearted attitude to it, the government doesn't bother with it hardly at all. There's been a gambling bill there since 2013, 5 years ago, right? That hasn't been enacted yet. They don't seem to see any urgency about it. They don't realise that, you know, it's not fun for a lot of people. And it's not just these extreme cases. See, they always present it as this is something that most people can do without any bother, but a very, very small minority of people might have a problem, right? I don't agree with that. I think that's wrong. I think there's that online gambling is not just a small minority of people have a problem. I think quite a large minority of people have a problem, and I think it's getting bigger every day, and I think we don't know how big it is for the nature of the thing. I don't know where their research is coming from about a tiny minority of people, but we're constantly seeing people, you know, having their lives ruined by it. You know, dies up in court every couple of weeks on, you know, who stole 400 grand or something, you know. So it's a bigger problem than any even common sense would tell you. It's a much bigger problem than is acknowledged or known about. And the governments really have been very, very poor on it. They don't understand it, basically.
I'm talking with Declan Lynch, author of the book Tony 10. And Tony done the crime, done the time, and he's gone on to work in the area helping people who have fallen into gambling problems. Can I just ask, it's just because it's there at the front of my head. What happens to the money? Does he have to pay that back?
To Unpost. Tony wouldn't remotely be able to do that. But you see, what happened, it all went to Paddy Power, clearly. The issue is whether Paddy Power, I was sending questions to Paddy Power, wondering where they going to give that money back, because it's, if you like, stolen money. Like, Tony went to jail, that was his sanction for it, right? He has personal debts which he's paying back, you know, debts for, you know, he would have borrowed money. He's paying that back, certainly, you know. But as regards the huge, you know, large figure that was bet with Paddy Power, we've never been able to find out. I mean, they won't talk about it. That's another truly extraordinary thing. Well, they will respond to me by saying we don't discuss individual cases, right? Now, Tony is perfectly willing for them to discuss it, so. It's not that anything to do with him. They're not protecting him here. So that's their corporate position, that they simply do not and have not spoken about it and won't talk about it. Again, that seems to be regarded as okay. Like, it's remarkable stuff. It really is. If you can get them to talk about it, I'd be delighted to hear it.
If I did, I'd be a better journalist than you, and I definitely am. This is very serious. Tony faced up to his problems and he got through them, and he is good now. He's in a good place. But many people who get caught or about to be caught, it doesn't end well for them, does it?
No, Brian. I mean, there's no question but that, you know, suicide is a major risk here. You know, there are all sorts of problems. People become very isolated in themselves because they've got this kind of secret life, you know. Tony would have been there, betting on his laptop. He'd be sitting on one side of the room and he'd be on his laptop, you know, having very large bets. And, you know, his partner would be in some other part of the room or some other part of the house, completely oblivious of this, you know. And people are able to do this now because of kind of just the technology, and they're carrying around this kind of desperate situation with them all the time, getting worse and worse. The stress of that is extraordinary. I find this unimaginable, like how someone like Tony, the amounts of money that he was down, and yet you see there is part of the addiction of gambling is that people always think they can get out of it. Do you know what I mean? Using the same way they got into it. This is not the case with anything else. You know that you can't get out of alcoholism by drinking more, but you do think that you can solve your gambling problems with, like, you know, one big win or a few big wins. So that's the real killer with gambling addiction, and what makes it, I think, probably the most intractable of all the addictions, that it has this terrible factor in it that, you know, people still hope till the very end. Like, when Tony was on the run and up in Carrickfergus, even there, he had a bit of hope. He had, you know, he was betting. he's, you know, extraordinary. Imagine someone that his life more or less ruined. He's literally on the run from the authorities in another jurisdiction, and he still thinks he can get it back. You know, the extremes of this are really alarming, and as a mental health issue, it's an extraordinarily difficult one, and so many people, I'd say, are suffering from this at the moment, and they can't be otherwise. I think, you know, and men in particular, it's a sports betting in particular is still largely a male thing, and as we know, men in general anyway are not great at kind of coming forward about these things.
If you had the ear of Mr. Varadkar or Mr. Pascal Donoghue, what would you say to them in regard to betting and curbing the actions of the companies?
The first thing, which is a practical thing, would be advertising. Tomorrow morning, stop it all, right? A bit like cigarettes, you know? I think if we look back on all this in 20 years' time, the way we now look at a time when you had ads for cigarettes, you know, on television, and doctors would be advertising cigarettes, you know. Hilarious stuff now, it seems. But we'll probably look back on this amazing time when, like, we were inundated with all, like, 9 of the 20 teams in the Premier League were advertising betting companies, right? I think it's 17 of the 24 in the Championship in England are sponsored by Betterco. They own the world. It's an amazing thing, right? They are paying for everything, they're sponsoring everything, and they're doing that for a reason, because they think that legislation will come in at some stage, and it's almost that they're rounding up as many addicts as is humanly possible. So the first thing I would say, a practical thing to these guys, is go for that. Go for the kind of promotion, the advertising. The thing that Michael D. Higgins was talking about, indeed, you know, he's actually put that on the agenda a bit, and the reason that it would be difficult for them is that they'll immediately be lobbied by the corporate bookies, which are now huge corporates. They're not like guys with sort of trilbies,
doing toast down in the racetrack.
Absolutely. Now, these are corporate dudes, you know, major, you know, corporate, global corporations. And they'll just be saying things like, you know, well, loads of sports will actually go out of business if you do that.
But they're not just in Gibraltar. They're headquartered here in Dublin. They're Irish companies.
Absolutely. And they know that they have succeeded in buying into so many sports now that those sports themselves couldn't exist without them. And so they'll be saying to Leo Varadkar or Pascal Donoghue, if you want to do that, fine. But I can assure you, you'll be kind of causing consternation among the so many of the sporting organisations who won't be able to function without us. And you know what? They're right. Do you know what I mean? It's gone so far and has got, like, the horse has bolted. Do you know what I mean? It's really beyond sort of most sort of people's comprehension now. And so much of the damage is already done that if the government steps in now, they are bound to kind of cause all sorts of problems for people. So it's really intractable. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you look at so many sports on television, they're sponsored by, even like the darts, say, for example, at Christmas. That's a betting company sponsors it, right? It's hard to think of any sport, actually, that isn't hugely supported by, and look at the snooker, all this, right?
I'll give you an example. I watched Leeds versus Derby there about a week and a half ago, and Leeds were sponsored by 32bet, and Derby were sponsored by 32bet. I think, yeah. And Leeds were playing away, not in their ordinary colour, and I go, which team am I watching? I couldn't even use the advertisement to tell me which team, because they were both sponsored by 32bet.
Yeah, and if you were to look into the finances of those clubs, they're probably receiving such a large amount of money from those companies that there's no other form of sponsorship they could get that could come close to it.
Yeah.
And that's a reality. I actually, to some extent, have a sort of a sympathy for people in that situation, that the betting companies plonk down some immense amount of money that nobody else is giving them or can hope to do it. And they're thinking, like, you know, we have to take this. Do you know what I mean? They're constantly being given offers they can't refuse. That is the culture that has been allowed to thrive. I was writing about this years ago. So and even then I thought, oh God, this is getting out of control a bit. And like 10 years have gone by. And this, they've constantly kept pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. And you've got, you know, it's gone so far now that it's almost unfixable. You know?
You've written the trilogy about gambling, and it sounds like Tony Ten sounds like a really good read, very interesting but very important read. Is there any talk of a film or any interest in that area?
Well, yeah, I mean, so many people who've read the book, and a lot of people have read it, I mean, we're still getting great reactions to it, which is so gratifying, particularly for Tony, because, as I said, it was such a difficult thing for him to do, and he was taking such a risk, you know, but he had a great response to it, and we're really delighted with that. And so many people who read it, the first thing they say is that'd be a great film, you know. And one of my favorite comments was guy in the Brian Boyd in the Irish Times saying that, you know, chapter 10 alone has more drama in it than an entire year of Netflix. You know, that's the one about his wedding. Where, you know, he literally had to, he had to pay for his wedding by the horse winning the Derby. You know what I mean? He was depending on a horse to win the Derby to be mad stories like that. But it's so dramatic. Even sort of the kind of less dramatic parts of it are gripping. Do you know what I mean? So it's such a story of one man, one ordinary man, who gets into a world of madness. And it's, of course, so many people say, yeah, it'll be a great film. And I'm sure it would be. We have talked to a few people about it, and that's ongoing. And the book is still out there, and it's doing great. And, you know, it's been a great project, and it's been, I think, a really useful thing. Because, as you say, you know, this needs to be done. People need to know about this stuff. And Tony's story is the ultimate one. I know of no other story which has so many of the elements that his one does. And that is just so gripping and so kind of tragic, and yet ultimately kind of redemptive in the end, you know.
The book is called Tony Ten. It's in all the good bookstores, and you can probably download it on Amazon Kindle as well. Declan Lynch, thank you for your time today. We're going to have some support numbers for gambling in a couple of moments, but the very best of luck in the future.
Thanks, Brian. Cheers.
Those contact numbers for help with gambling, Rutland Centre, are available 24 hours on 01494 6358, and their website is rutlandcentre.ie. You can also get in touch with Problem Gambling Ireland, and they're at problemgambling.ie on the web, and their phone number is a mobile 089 241 5401. This has been Mental Wealth with Brian Green. We're back next Tuesday at 12:30. If you want to get in touch with the programme, it's mentalwealth@dublincityfm.ie. Until next week, take care, stay safe, bye-bye.